Yes, wherever you are, we are greeting you from your number one favorite talk radio station in Namibia. That is Eagle FM. Whether you are on your way to work, you are driving back home from work, you are just waking up now, looking at how you are going to go through the day. But the fact that you listen or you tuning into Eagle FM Namibia, then we are very happy with that, because we are going to be here for quite some time. We are going to be here for a long, especially when it's coming to economic discussion, when especially it's coming to developmental affairs. And the center of the discussion is always that what can we learn from each other? What is your contribution to the conversation? What can we learn, especially when it's come to conversation that regarding development of our country, conversation that regarding, emancipation from mental slavery, and also how do we do it differently? How do we do it practically? And also, what do we need to do differently, particularly when it's coming to economic strategy, when it's coming to implementation strategies, and also when it's coming to developmental affairs, and also new ways of thinking. Because when you realize and you look at yourself, you look at, institutions of governance, and also either it's local, regional, or national authorities, then you realize that there's something that is not being done well. When you realize that something has continued to be, stuck, or something continued to be a problem, what do you need to do differently? What new mechanism are you going to put in place to make sure that we get the Namibia that we want? And it's only us who are going to fix our country through collaborative approach, and also through deep critical thinking, and also supported by practical. So let us look at what is happening, particularly when it's coming to international affairs, before we come to what is on the table today, because the conversation for today is going to be interesting, particularly when we are going to look at the informal economy, how government, how financial institutions realize that they cannot move forward anymore without incorporating of informal economy to the formal economy. How is that going to be done? Is it really possible? What are the new challenges which are there? What is new from this report? And also, what has been persisting for quite some time? And do we have capacity? Do we have energy? Do we have time even to make sure that we incorporate that? What are the pros and cons and all those things? But for now, let us look at what is happening around us, particularly when it comes to issues of global affairs, issues of governance, politics, and also issues of international relations. So from that side of United States, it was stated that the U.S. government made $7.5 million payment to the government of Equatorial Guinea as it seek to deport people to West African country and draw closer heavily to the prosecuted leaders, according to the Democratic Senator of Foreign Relations Committee in the U.S. Because remember, United States is busy deporting people, particularly illegal immigrants, and also try to clean its country. I don't know if it's a good intention or a bad intention, but that is up to us to interpret, to say why the United States of America is doing this. And paying $7.5 million US dollars to the government of Equatorial Guinea, and looking back in history of Equatorial Guinea, and also in history of US democracy and their views on leaders, and also politics of some of the African country, you quite see. Somebody may ask, is that a double standard? Is that what needs to be done at that moment in time? Because if you look at the leadership of Equatorial Guinea, you look at Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, the strongman of Equatorial Guinea, somebody who has been in power since 1979, since the 1970s, there, after taking over power through a coup, and he has been in power until now. It's up to you to interpret, because when you speak about longest serving African leaders, it's not only Paul Biya, but you still have strong men in Africa, and you are also asking what is the relationship between the United States of America and Equatorial Guinea. But these are some of the criticism which are coming from the Democrats, especially toward the Republican leadership under President Donald Trump. But it's quite very important to look at this news and also to see what is the way forward, and also what is the perspective, particularly from Democrats, and also your own perspectives too, especially when you look at Equatorial Guinea and also the move of United States of America into this regard. So let us look at this news and move forward.
The U.S. government paid Equatorial Guinea $7.5 million in exchange for accepting people deported by Washington, according to a Democratic senator. In a letter to Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Senator John Shaheen called the payment an irresponsible use of taxpayer funds. The $7.5 million, the senator said, exceeds the amount the U.S. has given to Malabo in aid over the last 8 years. President Teodoro Obiang Nguema has been in power in oil-rich Equatorial Guinea since 1979. He's been accused of corruption and repression. Despite the country's massive oil wealth, at least 70% of its nearly 2 million people are said to live in poverty. In aiming to ramp up deportations, the U.S. has sought to forge agreements with countries to take in migrants who are not their citizens. The U.S. has also struck deportation deals with Uganda, Eswatini, Ghana, Rwanda, among other African countries. Washington has offered money and other diplomatic concessions in exchange.
Yeah, that is what's happening, particularly that side of Equatorial Guinea, and strengthening of the relationship between Equatorial Guinea and the United States of America, especially looking at deportation. And you're also asking yourself to say why people are being deported to Africa, why money is given so that people are being deported to Africa, especially in accommodating of illegal immigrants. Is that how things should be, or is that how things are going to continue being done? And also, what are some of the implications, particularly when it comes to move forward? Is it now a new deal? Has it been the relationship so far for quite some times? Or is just to say, because we don't want this one, let's send them to Africa. Let's give them this amount of money. Whether you have a stable democracy or not, whether you have, you know, the policy of free market as the U.S. has been backing, or is the new deal based on the situation that is on the ground for that moment. So that is up to us to go and interpret and also see. And also understand that in a world of global affairs, in the world of international relations, friendship can always come together, particularly when they share common interests. When you need money, somebody give you money so that you can push his or her agenda, particularly in the world of international affairs. That's why you will be able also to see that although some relationship are based on values, some relationship are based on policies, some relationship are based on how you share the interest within or between the two states. But some relations are based on assistance at that point in time. But it's up for interpretation and also see, particularly looking at the leadership and also the relationship between the United States of America and also Equatorial Guinea. Yeah, moving forward, let us look at Tanzania. It was stated that Tanzania release opposition figures arrested during election protest. Tanzanian authority released four opposition figures who were arrested on accusation of involvement in deadly election protest in October. And it was stated that Chadema vice chairperson John Henke was among the four who were released on bail. He had been arrested in October 2022. And, you know, questioned by police on suspicious of terrorism, according to his lawyer. And, you know, you'll be also be able to ask questions to see, is it this release politically timed? Is there an independence between the judicial system and, the executive authority? Or is it, because of, international pressure? Is it because of, African Union pressure, especially African Union observation mission? And, that, you know, John Heck and, also, the main leaders such as, Tudulisu, who is still in jail, due to, you know, charges of, you know, his terrorism, and, is also charges of, treason. He's still there, and, you're also asking to say, is this because of pressure, or is it because of, the situation, or is it, because of legal matters? As, you understand that, the 8th of October I have seen, the president of Tanzania retaining power with, 98% of, total election votes, and that led to protest, and, there have been, you know, unverified and, also, you know, claims of, more than 1,000 people who became casualties, especially, when this, when, there was a clash between, you know, clash between, the authority of Tanzania and also the protesters, people who were protesting against, you know, the result of elections. But, let us look at this news and also, move forward, particularly when it's coming to development in Tanzania. And sometimes you can also be able to see that, you know, it's quite a positive development when people are being released. But the question is that, was it timing? Was it because of timing? Was it because of now there are no more a threat to elections? Or is it, legal, you know, proceedings, which are coming to, which are coming out, and also, the exercise of, judicial authority. But, that is, what is happening. That is, what is, happening. However, let us look at, this news and, look forward.
Tanzanian authorities on Monday released four opposition figures who were arrested on accusations of involvement in deadly election protests in October. Chadema Vice Chairman John Heche was among the four released on bail. He had been arrested on October 22nd and questioned by police on suspicion of terrorism, according to his lawyer. The protests, which experts say are the East African country's biggest political crisis to date, started on the eve of the election, which President Samia Suluhu Hassan won with nearly 98%. Chadema has claimed as many as 1,000 people were killed by security forces. There has been no word on the death toll by the Tanzanian authorities. In her inauguration speech, President Hassan acknowledged fatalities but stopped short of announcing an investigation. On Friday, prosecutors charged at least 145 people with treason over their alleged involvement in the protests.
Yeah, those are the developments in Tanzania. It's a positive news for opposition leaders to be released. And the question of contradiction is also asking a question to say, now, charging 145 people because of treason on Friday and releasing their leader on Monday, what is the relationship there? Because if you are charging people of treason, the main mastermind was supposed to be the one who is in prison. But for now, this is what is happening. This is what is happening, but it's a question of new development, and also to see that it's positive development. It's positive development, particularly when somebody, or we want the Africa that we want, because the Africa that we want, especially with the Africa that we, or things that we are doing now, are not corresponding with the African Agenda 2063 and what we need to be done in the future. But for now, let's go shortly to NRSC and come back.
Do you ever wonder why we have so many road rules? Like, don't jaywalk, don't drink and drive, don't drive with underinflated tires, and don't speed. It's because we don't want you to put your life at risk. Don't become a statistic, don't become a headline. Be a responsible road user. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Yeah, we are moving forward. It's 30 minutes past the hour of 6 a.m. and you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with David Shombe. We are here until the hour of 8, especially when you are going to give the mic to the big mic to unpack the day. For now, let us look at Let's look at Libya. Let us look at Hannibal Gaddafi. Let us look at Libya. And also, before we come to South Africa, then we come to Namibia to see what is at home, what is at home, what need to be done, and also what is the conversation going, particularly in the area of informal economy. But you can engage us in the studio at 083-288-401, especially regarding your contribution on global affairs and also issues of continental affairs. So it was stated that the Lebanese authority released the son of the late Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, on Monday after he paid $900,000 on bail, ending his 10 years detention, allegedly withholding of information about missing Lebanese religious leader, security officials, and a member of his defense team. Now, what you need to do, and what you also need to look at, is that when one of the African strongest leader fell, or when he was overthrown by, by NATO assistant, and also opposition groups within Libya, that is in 2011. We have seen the destruction of properties and also poverty persisting in Libya. And Libya never came back to the international spotlight. It became not really to say a failed state, but a state with little directions. And also the world has condemned the killing of Gaddafi. But remember, when Gaddafi went down, Gaddafi had many sons, and also some of them, they suffered persecution. Some of them died, and also some of them went into exile. But one of them who was jailed for the past 10 years is Hannibal. It's Hannibal Gaddafi. And it was stated that he was released. He was released from prison, from Lebanese prison. And it's also very important also to look at this news. And his lawyer, Jabel Milad Al-Kayor, indicated that Hannibal is officially free and have full right to choose the destination that he wants. This is also making you to ask a question that are we expecting new leadership in Libya? Are we expecting him to follow the footstep of his father, or is going to choose a different path? He's going to business, he's going back to his country, or it's up to us to look at what is really going to happen moving forward. Because remember, you still have function within Libya who are still supporting the philosophy and the leadership of Gaddafi and his regime. But it's also quite important to look at where he's going to go post his release from prison. And also maybe also to compare with other sons of political leaders, especially those who had influence. Be able to remember that he's a son of Osama bin Laden, who decided to choose a different path. He's into fashion, he's into business, and he's living luxurious, and he's not involved into politics. It's quite interesting to see, but people still beg those who came closer, or those who have been closer to power and influence. But it's up to also look at what Hannibal is going to do post his release from detention. And looking at the name, you realize that Gaddafi knew how to name his sons, because Hannibal, looking at the history of war, Hannibal is one of in the historical figures in military history. But it's up to us to go and look at that. But for now, let us look at this news before we come into South Africa and come back at home to see what is really happening in Namibia, what's happening in our motherland, and move forward. So let us look at the release of Hannibal Gaddafi and move forward.
Provide further details. Lebanese authorities released the son of late Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi on Monday after he paid a $900,000 bail. The decision ended Hannibal Gaddafi's 10-year detention for allegedly withholding information about a missing Lebanese cleric. A lawyer for Gaddafi refused to provide further details about his future movements due to security concerns. The release came just days after Lebanese authorities lifted Gaddafi's travel ban and reduced his bail from $11 million to $900,000, paving the way for his release. A Libyan delegation visited Lebanon before this decision and said it had made progress in talks on Gaddafi's release. Gaddafi had been living in exile in Syria when he was abducted in 2015 and brought to Lebanon. He was accused of withholding information about the fate of Lebanese cleric Musa al-Sadr, who disappeared during a trip to Libya in 1978.
Yeah, that is what is happening, especially when you look at that side of Lebanon, and also looking at the future of Hannibal Gaddafi. Is he going to be like other leaders? He's going to choose a different path, and everybody is watching, because Gaddafi's lineage is not yet out, although in the world of democracy, you are not guaranteed. If you are a son of a president, it's not a guarantee that you are going to lead the country. Although we also have a history of those who decided to look into the footsteps of their parents, especially when it's coming to leadership, political affairs, and also issues of governance. Yeah. Let's look at a short commercial break. Then from there, we are going to look at South Africa, especially ANC, and also the step aside rule, or the authorization of the suspended minister Sesom Tsunu to take leave from African National Congress activities, especially when it was confirmed by the Secretary General of African National Congress, that is Fikile Mbalula, especially in connection with an ongoing commission of inquiry, especially the two parallel commissions of inquiry, the parliamentary ad hoc committee, which is based on asking questions and also investigating the infiltration of a criminal justice system, which it has implicated top cops in South Africa, including the Minister of Police, the generals, top generals, and also different units within South African police. And it's up to us to look at, go deep, and also do your study, do your research. And also the main question is not only to see other people going down, but also what can we learn from this? And also what lesson are we taking, especially when you want to strengthen our criminal justice system, and also not repeat the same mistakes, because mistakes, challenges, and history is there to teach us to say when other people have made certain mistake, when other people have failed, it's up to us to learn from that history, because through civilization, history has always been repeating itself, and it's a lesson for somebody who is living in the present to learn from what others have done, and also to use that as a case study to analyze ourselves and move forward. So let's look at a short commercial break. Then from there, we'll look at Sesom Tsunu before we come to Namibia.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of
its Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoewe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angetashia kengeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa vera etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyzes issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Looking at South Africa, it was stated that the African National Congress has confirmed that the party has granted suspended police minister Sezo Mtsono request for special leave from party activities. And this was confirmed by, African National Congress Secretary General, that is Fikile Mbalula, especially speaking to national press. And, it's quite a development because last week the minister the suspended minister of South Africa was also requested to head over his electronic device to the authority, especially the investigative authority. And it's up to us to look and also check what is really happening in South Africa. What is really happening in South Africa? Is the minister going to be arrested? Is the minister taking another leave because he's already on special leave? But he wants more time to concentrate on his case. He wants more time to concentrate on his case, or he is backing down. And somebody has proved me wrong because, when I first watched the appearance of Sezo Mtsono, especially the first appearance at a parliamentary ad hoc committee, I was so impressed by his confidence, by the way he was answering questions. But somebody said you must wait and also see the development. But what is happening now? Seems like there is a crack in his defense. That's why he's also asking for a special leave, especially from the activity of the party. Is it protecting of the party's image, or he want to concentrate on his battle? Especially when it comes to commissions of inquiries, parallel commission of inquiries, especially looking at the infiltration of criminal judicial judicial system, and also see what are the developments happening there, especially in South Africa. But it's quite very interesting to see because when you look at the politics of Sezo Mtsono, been one of the strongest figures in South African politics, and a lot of people thought he would be the successor of the sitting president, particularly looking at his alliance, looking at his popularity in the party, and also looking at his influence that he has. Because remember, during the most contested NC Congress, especially that I've seen the merging of Cyril Ramaphosa is the president of the party, and also the vice by that time, David Abedi Mabuza. and Ace Magashure, particularly after stepping down of Jacob Zuma. Sinam Tsuno was one of the contested of SG position, and he almost got the numbers, but unfortunately was defeated by Ace Magashure. But looking at what is happening now, seem to be like the authority is catching up with him. That's why he decided to, when he's already on a special leave, want another special leave again from party activities, and looking forward at what is very interesting to see. And it's also the interest of Namibians, especially those who follow politics, those who follow the economy of South Africa, to see who is going to be the successor of Cyril Ramaphosa, because he's not going to run anymore due to that he's on his second term. And two contested or predicted contested, that is the sitting SG Fikile Mbalula, and also the vice not the vice president but the deputy president Paul Mashatire, and many others who are also coming. People are also, there are also prediction of Patrick Motsepe to throw his hat in the ring. But those are the development which still have to come out, and it's up to us also, or it's up to you to watch the space and also look ahead. So from there, while we are there, it's also quite interesting to look at what is happening, especially when it comes to the development in SA regarding the high profile cases of you know, of the killings of the former well-known rapper or singer in South Africa, AK. It was stated that the brothers linked to the AK murder who were arrested appeared in court. Two suspects in high-profile murder case, that is the suspect in the murder of AK appeared in Durban court. That was yesterday, after they were extradited from Eswatini, and faced charges related to the killing of AKA in February 2023. And it's news to look at, and it's also in line or related or connected to the ongoing commission of inquiry, especially when it's coming to high profile killings in South Africa. So it's 48 minutes past the hour of 6, and you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And let us look at commercial break, then we can come to Namibia and also ask questions, particularly with about to be resolved magistrate strike about to be resolved. Seems like the Minister of Justice and also the magistrates commission about to reach an agreement, especially regarding what has been ongoing strike or slow work process regarding unfulfilled request from magistrate, and also maybe to see the development and also the return of magistrates to work. But the question has always been to say how is that process going to be handled, particularly when somebody is coming from strike, somebody coming from a demonstration, and you have to preside over everybody, because a magistrate or a judge or a prosecutor is the most powerful person when it's coming to, not only in terms of judicial system, but when it's coming to democracy. But his neutrality, his balance of facts is quite important, particularly when you want to deliver fairness and justice within judicial system, and also management of people. Because when you have an angry magistrate, when you have unsatisfied magistrate, when you have a judge who is not agreeing, and it's also a question of us to see the test between the executive and also the judicial system, especially who has power over to oversee check and balance. Because here the Minister of Justice saying he has executive authority and also to give directive, especially when it's coming to judicial affairs. And here they are saying we are independent. You are not quoting any act. You know, dealing with a lawyer, you need another lawyer for you to make sure that that law is in order. And that's why the lawyers, the magistrate also have to go to their lawyers to respond to the lawyer who is a justice minister, and also to see the interpretation. And it's how legal jargons are being interpreted. But at the end of the day, what you want to see is Namibia moving forward. What you want to see is a Namibian economy expanding. What you want to see is Namibia basic needs being addressed. And also what you want to see is us moving from point A to B. And also, instead of fighting, looking at what can we do, how can we work together as all Namibians, particularly when we have national priorities, when we have agendas on the table, when we have plans that we have been planning, when we have reports, when you have statistics that we speak with confidence about our problems, when you have conference after conference about addressing these issues. What we're looking into is practicality and the end of poverty and also suffering. But it's quite interesting to see. So let us look at the caller before we go to the conversation. Good morning.
Good.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're on air. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
No, I'm well.
Today we are here again, but yesterday we couldn't conclude one of the points that I wanted to make it clear.
But can we look at today's conversation, please?
No, I will look at today's conversation, but it's also in line. Anyway, I'll bring it in at one point on the time.
Yeah, because...
but looking at the issue of politics,
yeah,
you know, politics now is now within the, we are looking at it from the political sphere, whether it's the administration of justice, is it the one that the criminal justice system that is captured?
Yeah.
In fact, the whole system is just captured in South Africa when you look at it. Except that, yes, you had some very trustworthy people who are really there to protect the integrity of the system, their system.
Mm-hmm.
So now, but then those people who never wanted to compromise on that, those principles, they were then assassinated. That's where the problem is. And it's very important that we strengthen or craft up legislation that really protects the whistleblowers, or how do you call them again?
Yeah, yeah.
Those who want to come forward and give information.
Yeah,
I have heard that people talking about that point and things like that. I don't know, maybe you might need also to advise us better whether those people who want to come out to report corruption of this level, of that high level, are really protected. And we have heard in South Africa, they are not protected because the system, the link comes up to, even to the, you know, those people in the high authority. So how secured are we, even within our country here, that protect the protection of even our magistrates and prosecutors and all these people?
Yeah.
Because there are those who really want to, you know, to make sure that they really protect and represent the crimes and the interests of the public. And so, how is it how do you call those ones?
Whistleblower Act.
Yeah, whistleblowers.
Yeah,
how protected are they?
I'm yet to find out the way it is, because it was presented, the Whistleblower Act, it was presented. And also to see how is it finalized and at what point it is and how long people are going to wait. And the other thing, is it strengthening of the institution or the AIM thing? Because I have a different view, especially when you see somebody saying a person want to build more. Why do we need to build more correctional services instead of working on what is the cost of those things and move forward? Because we end up losing more than what we, you know, expect. But I'm not in disagreement with what you are saying. But why can't we fix the main cause of those unethical?
The building of prison is a kind of maybe a predetermined kind of situation, which is supposed not to be done because you are already looking at the crime. Of course, because the crime has to be dealt with by when it happens. And then that's when now you can now formulate up some registration that yes, how to deal with that particular crime. But if you build a prison in advance, then your expectation is that yes, criminals need to happen.
Yeah.
But obviously we know very well that criminals need to have to be happening, but that should not occupy your mind as of now, because it has not taken place. But I think to deal with the system is really to enhance and make sure that you protect the public. And also, excuse me?
Yeah, continue.
Yes. So now this is the legal subject who are also there to be protected by the state through that social contract that we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
And we also have this, the schedule should also then have, they also have the legal rights to those legal subjects, I mean objects that are there that need to be protected. Hence, I brought in my point of yesterday that if I am also a legal subject for the state to provide and look after me, and I have got the right also to those legal objects. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Why should I then be excluded? That's the point that I wanted to make yesterday. So the other thing is on the issue of promoting democratic values, which you feel that sometimes in other countries, maybe Namibia is a bit better.
Yeah.
I don't know how you are faring in that. Looking at the East Africa where you're talking, and there are these Libyans and others, we know very well that this was actually more of external forces. Even in South Africa, you hear about people who were giving some kind of donation yesterday, even if you're talking about donation and things like that. And no wonder why, now I understand why the government was, the state wanted to make sure that some of these donations and coming and things like that need to be scrutinized. Because sometimes they can come and destabilize the sovereignty of the state without us knowing. And this come in the pretext of the donation. This is what we are hearing from South Africa. And even the foreign government in the coming in, even though the judicial system and those people who are now under scrutiny are not saying it openly that yes, we have this relationship with the, imagine not even with the government, with the state itself, but we are having these things with individual people who are now trying to make sure that the system is completely destroyed. And we are hearing how many prosecutors were killed just because of that, and people want to hide. So if we can really, if we compromise our judicial and criminal system, honestly speaking, we are in trouble.
Hold on.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben brandneue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia Dollar pro Monat oder spare noch mehr mit unserem speziellen Abonnementplänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem einen 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia reminds all registered voters, November 26, 2025 is the day to cast your vote. Head to the polls and exercise your democratic right by voting. Your vote is your voice, so put your voice in the box to make sure it's heard. Vote on November 26, 2025.
Yeah, in my conclusion, I conclude with that, that yes, the states, the stages have all, get the, when they are in the contract, social contract that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the state has the responsibility to provide, whether it's housing or whatever kind of services to their own citizens. Mm. And if I'm also, and yourself are also, part of that,
yeah.
Then that means you can also have legal rights to those legal objects, maybe like housing and many other things. So that is the point that I wanted to make. I don't know why people, some excluded, maybe myself and yours or many others,
mm-hmm.
When they are actually benefiting from those things. You don't benefit from, of course, you must getting the contract and say, fine, this is what I'm going to do. If you have to buy a house, whether you are buying it from the state or whatever, why is that not permissible? According to your discussion yesterday?
What do you mean in terms of housing?
So any other provisions, you as a student, you can buy a house from the state. You can buy a property from the state because of your legal rights object.
Do you know the average price of a house currently, if you are speaking in Namibia? Just maybe a one-bedroom house. Average price.
Yeah, because there are different entities that sell.
No. Just an average house. Somebody, you get a job, you get money somewhere, you want to buy a house. An average house is around 1.4 million.
1.4 million, yeah. Even in Katutura, you get a house of the one that the National Housing Enterprise, whatever, is building, and all these dollars.
At what price? Let me say you just recently graduated, you get a job, you're a young professional, then you want to start a family. Mm-hmm. An average house, according to statistics, 1.4 million. An average house that you can buy. How many Namibians? That is we are talking about average, which means that is the basic that you can get. Now,
but it's not the may not be the basic, because if you buy a house, a 1.2 million house, that you might get it in Crane Windhoek or any town suburbs and things like that, which might be different from the one that you buy in Komazda, for example.
No.
So I don't know how.
Because I don't want to debate. Because let's speak about the basic understandable living standard. Because when you speak about basic understandable living standard, you need a house, not only not a room. It's not a flat. A house where you are safe, you are secured, and your kids are also safe. Not just anything that you can get. But that is an average. Yeah.
The two-bedroom house in say Crane Windhoek, it's easy to get it for 1.5 million. But the one that the similar house in Soweto or wherever, in especially in those areas, informal settlement, you might not get it at 1.5 million.
Okay. You know, everybody has an opinion, but we need to go back and also check what the data are saying.
Yes, let's check the data that are what are saying when you have a house in Komazda, and the one in Katutula, and then the one in Clean Windhoek or those other Eros or wherever, you know. So So they might have different prices, okay. Which is also not good when the house, like you are saying, the average house, maybe a one bedroom or two bedroom cost 1.5 million, which is also very exhausted. Okay. That price is very exhausted.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
All right.
Yeah, we are, it's 5 minutes past the hour of seven, and we are progressing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic affairs in a short period of time. We are going to look at, you know, dissecting the report, especially the diagnostic report on informality, where you have the government, your financial institutions, which have realized that it's not possible anymore for development to be realized if you are not incorporating people in the informal sector. Because they realize, to say, financial circulation, most of the financial circulation, most of the employment in Namibia are happening within the informal sector. However, there is challenges, there are bottlenecks, such as security, such as operation spaces, such as contradictory in terms of legal framework, either is within the city, either within the town, wherever you are finding yourself, there is always complaint, there is always an abuse of, you know, informal traders, any town. And when a commander of a police within a certain town given instruction, is given instruction according to the law. And is that law acceptable? Is that law accommodative? Why do you have to beat? Why do you have to confiscate tomatoes of somebody who struggles so much, who have maybe 20 kids at home that she or he has to support? Why can't we look at coexistence without compromising the urban standard? How do you deal with issues such as accessing international market? And I was also very happy to see the report that it was, to me, it was a satisfactory report, but it has to go to implementation part, because one of the things which stood out for me is bottlenecks and challenges which are faced by informal economy, particularly when you are not able to accept and balance or incorporate informal economy into an economy. One of the things which stood out is that when the presenter, the project lead, was speaking about, particularly in the area of agriculture and farming, he spoke about some of the things such as a red line, to say there's a challenge in terms of legal affairs, especially when you speak about the red line issue, because farmers are not able to access the market equally. Because if you want one economy, why do you want one economy if you have a divided country in terms of the movement of goods? Because the difference there is only the geographical area, but people are still moving on the other side. If I go to the north for a wedding and I ate the meat, every minister who go to the north at the wedding, they eat the meat. They don't go there with a tester. Every person, every parliamentarian, most of these people, they travel. And if there is a certain event happening, even a state event, the food which are being eaten is on the other side. But the challenges of informality is what has been persisting. But that's the conversation that we are going to look at. We do a short commercial break, then we come back to the conversation. And you're also going to listen to the project lead of that program.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
station. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngendo wapumbwa Eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushenji fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah. We look at the diagnostic report on informality and Namibia aim to incorporate informal sector into a formal economy, and also with their goods and benefits, and also to see how can we coexist. You know, this is a report that everybody should get access to. And when reading this report, when you are looking at the statistics, when you are looking, for example, in the sector of agriculture, in the sector of tourism, when you are looking at the numbers, when you are looking at the products, when you are looking at the challenges, ask yourself these questions to say, what is new? What is the defining factor? Because the defining factor or the differentiation factor is always meta, because policies, planning, we are very good at that. Nobody can deny with that. Namibia, we are good researchers and drafters of policies and programs. But the question is always here to say, what is going to differentiate us? What is going to be different from how things have been? There is no program which was not drafted. There is no program which was not communicated. Look at NDPs, all of them are NDP6. And the question is always, what is the differentiation factor? What is going to make us different? How long? Who is responsible? Look at, for example, strategy. I'm always impressed, but also concerned, especially when you look at strategies such as financial sector transformation strategy. It's quite a very good draft by, you know, BON and AMFISA and other stakeholders to say by 2035, everybody, or around 90% of Namibians who have access to formal financial services. Then you can come back and look at this diagnostic report. I do not want to go dive into it, but I want to take a few statements from those who were in charge of directing those priority areas. Then we are going to look at the conversation with the lead project, our project lead, and we are going to allow callers to give their input, especially when you look at the aspect of informality and how do we accept. When we speak about informal sector, what do we speak about? We speak about Stop and Shop. We speak about Havana Four-Way. We speak about people at Omatala Inoshakati, Kietman. We speak about the women who sell fat cakes at the gate of your school. We speak about the tax shops. We speak about the taxi drivers. We speak about the communal farmers and all those people who are in the sector.
Great news! IMBA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Yeah, we speak about vendors. We speak about everybody. We speak about our uncles who want to sell their goats and sheep this side of the market. You speak about Single Kota, Kapana, and all those people who are there. Now, one of the statements, especially regarding key players in these reports, the executive director in the Ministry of Finance, that is Michael Humavindo, who is the chairperson of the Working Committee on Informality, stated that no, it's now the time that Namibia is no more going to speak about two economies. Because government and every stakeholder, every researcher realized to say no, most of the people who are employed in Namibia, around 58% of the working force is within the informal economy, it's in the informal market. But at the same time, these are also the people who are also suffering due to regulations. These are the people who are running every day. You are running with your recharge because the police is saying, no, you cannot sell here. You are identifying the environment. But these are the people who employed majority of Namibians. But these are statistics based on research which was done. But the prediction is also that it can be more. Looking at, because no matter the challenges, every year, universities, they are graduates, not only at university, at training institutions. All the training institutions, there are graduates who are coming into the field. And most of these people, if they find it very difficult to, get something to do, the first point of departure is informal economy. Say that you start a business or you work for somebody who is in, has a small business so that you can make money and move forward. The taxi drivers, how are they treated? Are they speaking with one voice? Now, the other thing is also that Bank of Namibia, especially through the deputy governor of Bank of Namibia, that is Ebsen Wanguta, stated that in his speech, he indicated to say, this report should not gather dust in shelves. It should not be like any other reports, but it's a call for action, provide intervention, and also to recognize those who are at the periphery of the mainstream economy. Those who are at the periphery of the mainstream economy is that person who you can make money within the informal sector, but you don't have a bank account. You can make money within the informal sector, but you are not secured. You are not sure that the place that you are going to operate there next year. Because somebody may come and build something. Somebody may just come and chase you. So, and the other thing that say that everybody should be a key player in that sector. And also to understand what has been done. Now, one person stated, one of the participants, or the attendee stated that I've seen a lot of reports gathering dust. Who is going to implement this? Because you need the time frame, you need projection, and you also need steps ahead. Because what is very interesting is also that the report also came with a roadmap on what needs to be done, and also what need to be done moving forward. But for us, before we go to the conversation, I would like you to listen to my conversation with Kunadei Chivikwa. Kunadei Chivikwa is one of the project lead. So the project lead into this in compiling of this report, and it's quite interesting to look at what is that he has to say, especially when it comes to this report. Yes, dear listeners, we are continuing with Harry Morning Scoop. We are looking at issues of economic development. However, today we are going to speak about the informal market economy, and we are going to be referring, based on the report which was released yesterday, it's a report conducted in collaboration with the Ministry of Finance, Bank of Namibia, United Nations in Namibia, and also to look at the project lead of this project, that is Mr. Kenandei Chivikwa, especially when it's coming to the diagnostic of informality in Namibia, just to give us an overview of what happened, what are the key highlights, and we go to some of the questions, particularly on the way forward and collaboration. Mr. Chivikwa, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yes, let us look at the overview of this diagnostic informality in Namibia. What was the motivation of this study, and also what are the key overviews and the importance of this study, particularly regarding informal sector in Namibia?
Thank you very much. Let me start by saying that this report is or the presentation that I made this morning is a summary culminating from a content of three reports that we produced.
Yeah.
The first one was an overview of informality in Namibia.
Yeah.
And the second report was a sectoral analysis report.
Yeah.
And the third one was the policy framework and the roadmap to implement the findings and recommendations.
Yeah.
So the purpose of the diagnostic was to gain a comprehensive understanding of informality.
Yeah.
Examining both the social, economic, and spatial dimensions.
Yeah.
In order to be able to build a broad domestic consensus through a transparent participatory process to inform an evidence-based strategy on reducing informality in Namibia. So we went to do some overview. We looked at characteristics of informality in Namibia.
Yeah.
We looked at the factors of informality, the impact of informality, the regulatory framework and institutional environment, the current policy approaches to reduce decent work deficits, and comparing that also to best practices and lessons learned from other African countries.
Yes. While we are there, maybe just to give us specific, particularly the contribution of the informal sector to the national development, you know, to gross domestic product of the country, and also to look at also the employment rate, because we have seen various statistics within, you know, that informal sector, and also its contribution in that area.
We said the informality plays a critical role in livelihoods, employment, and survival for a significant portion of the population of Namibia. Now, despite its importance, the informal economy remains largely underrecognized in the legal and policy framework and is under supported practice.
Okay.
Now, to look at the figures, the contribution of the informal economy to the GDP of Namibia is 24.8%. 24.7%.
Okay.
Let me round off to say it's 25%.
Okay.
Which is a quarter of the GDP of the country is contributed by the informal economy.
Yeah.
And then the with regard to the informal employment, we are talking around 58% of informal employment provided by the informal economy.
Yeah.
Now, and then we looked at the the informal employment, for instance, in agriculture, forestry, and fishing,
yeah,
which is around 88%. And in the informal employment in the food and accommodation services is around 69%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, added to that,
yeah,
the statistics provided,
yeah,
indicate to us that informal employment in rural areas is around 79%. Mm-hmm. And in urban areas is around 42%. Mm-hmm. So it tells you the significance. Not to mention that women dominate the informal workforce,
mm-hmm.
Constituting about 53% of the participants,
mm-hmm.
And that youth, 73.4% of the youth employed is employed in the food. Who are employed in the food economy mm-hmm. let me put it that way, in the food and accommodation services,
uh-huh.
In informal employment. So it's a broad, very broad study,
mm-hmm.
or let me say, in fact, a research
yeah.
that we have undertaken over a period of 1 year.
Yeah. Now I want to ask also on what were some of key findings of the study, and also to maybe look at was in your study what is so different from other studies, what makes this study so different from other studies, and also maybe what are some of the people involved? Did you only include academicians and professionals within those who are doing the study, or you also include those who have experience in the informal market? Let me say somebody who was a former taxi driver then become a researcher. What is your view on that?
Yeah, the study included field work.
Uh-huh.
Let me also explain that our study looked, we could not do an analysis of all the sectors.
Yeah, yeah.
So it concentrated on two key sectors,
mm-hmm.
having informed by the statistics that we drew
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On GDP contribution, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at the agriculture, forestry, mm-hmm. and fishing mm-hmm. as one sector.
Yeah.
The other one is on accommodation
mm-hmm.
And food services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where our consideration, where we concentrated.
Uh-huh.
So now, now coming back to probably the conclusions of the study,
that
the ILO and Namibia, being a member of the International Labour Organization and other organizations, there is a push for a gradual, and I'm emphasizing the word gradual, transformation, push for gradual transformation from informality to formality.
Yeah.
But it's a concept being understood.
Yeah.
Probably you need another platform to explain that.
Yeah.
But the overall conclusions was that there's no single position on what it means to do or to be to transition from informal to informal economy in practice.
Mm-hmm.
We also looked at it and say informality in Namibia is deeply structural and is sustained by a combination of rural underdevelopment, policy and legal framework gaps,
mm-hmm.
and exclusion from formal support systems.
Yes, Mr. Jivikwa, just the last input, because a lot of people, they discuss and they also give you to say, let this not be just another studies. How can what is being presented here being implemented moving forward, particularly when you want to accommodate those who employ more than 50% of the people of Namibia?
Yeah, as I said, we developed three reports.
Yeah. Yeah.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Yeah, you are listening to the conversation between Mr. Konedai Chivikwa, and myself, especially regarding the informality, diagnostic report on informality, and also just to look at what he has to say, particularly the last part of the conversation.
We also looked at it and say informality in Namibia is deeply structural,
yeah,
and is sustained by a combination of rural underdevelopment, policy and legal framework gaps, mm-hmm, and exclusion from formal support systems.
Yes, Mr. Chivikwa, just the last input, because a lot of people, they discuss and they also give you to say, let this not be just another studies. How can what is being presented here being implemented moving forward, particularly when you want to accommodate those who employ more than 50% of the people of Namibia?
Yeah, as I said, we developed three reports.
Yeah.
The last report that we produced was a policy framework and a roadmap. Mm-hmm. So in that, we went to an extent to look at what is the challenge, mm-hmm, what is the possible intervention, mm-hmm, what is the possible impact.
So it's it's like an advisory paper to the
yes,
government.
Yes, okay. The policy and the roadmap.
Uh-huh.
So we, for instance, we are saying there must be a division created in the ministries of mines and energy,
mm-hmm,
specifically for the informal economy.
Yeah.
Which can be transformed into an agency over a period of time, let's say 2-3 years.
Yeah.
There's a motivation for that also included in that report.
Yeah.
We are, for instance, looking at the policy and bylaws, what should happen,
mm-hmm,
to amend these documents to make them relevant for and to be able to absorb the informal economy,
yeah,
and also incentives that can be rolled out,
mm,
to encourage the informal economy to informal sector,
mm-hmm,
to agree to the gradual transition to formality.
Yes, Mr. Chivikwa, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much and have a lovely day.
All right.
Yeah, that was Mr. Kenandei Chivikwa, one of the project leads, especially when it's coming to diagnostic report on informal economy and also what needs to be done. The structural challenges of informal economy, and he's also spoke about the roadmap on what needs to be done. One of the things that he mentioned in the conversation is that there must be a division within Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy, especially which has to do with informal economy, and also looking at the way forward, because there is a roadmap on what needs to be done. Because remember, when it comes to the main report itself, things such as security, things such as place of operation, things such as a legal framework, and also things such as coherence within ministries also were raised. But when you look at these findings, you'll be able to realize that those statistics are presented, some of the presentations or some of the information which came out are not new, especially when you speak about the legal framework. And somebody also stood up and say, even when we are discussing this report now, somebody is running in the city, in the CBD, somebody is being chased. And somebody have also asked, and there was one gentleman from MTA, it's only that I cannot remember his name, he said, guys, colleagues, let's get time and go, for example, to Havana Foway and observe. Especially month end, go make time and go to Stop and Shop. Not only in Win, not only Windhoek, but go to any other open market. Look at the treatment of these people. Look at the way they do business. Look at the relationship between them and their towns, and also many other things. So that is the conversation. You can call back at 083-288-401-083 2888-401, especially when you want to give your input regarding the conversation of the day, especially when there is a realization to say, when it's coming to informal market, when it's coming to the informal economy, it cannot be business as usual. And my concern and the question of everybody is always that who is going to take this on? Who is going to be able to implement the recommendations of this report? And remember, there are quite huge recommendations. And like how it has been, it requires somebody who can take bold steps, especially when it's coming to a legal framework. And you are also asking yourself to say, are those who are in charge of making laws, either it's bylaws or whether it's national laws, are those who are in charge understand? Are they reading this report? Are they prioritizing what need to be prioritized? How many laws have been reviewed? How many laws have been reviewed in the past 10 years, for example? How many of them are accommodative, especially to those who are called informal market? And you can also go and look at even bricklayers. Even the definition of subcontractors are not there. Those who are doing businesses online and many others, how do you make them part of formal economy so that we can move forward? And there is also a different debate to say, no, I think the formal sector have failed. That's why they want to incorporate the informal sector so that, you know, they want to, so that they can tax the small operators. But it's a question of debate and also to see that how can this be maximized, because regulation can maximize it, but there is also an aspect of sustainability. We can also link this conversation to what we spoke about beforehand, especially when we are speaking about protectionism, to say the informal economy is competing with global giants. What is the conversation in that area? What is the conversation in that area? Because you want to formalize it, but you also need to make sure that you are protecting these smaller operators, who, when you put them together, you realize that you have giant, which have percentage of a quarter of the GDP and their contribution. Because the other time we were speaking about SMEs in Namibia are contributing over 14%. But if you put all these things together, you'll be able to realize that it's a discussion which cannot be ignored. It's a discussion which needs expansion. And when somebody stood up and speak about it's not going to be like many others, then the question, your next question should always be, what is going to differentiate you? Do you have a game plan? How are you going to convince those lawmakers to review these policies immediately, or is something that can be achieved in 40 years? Because we spend more time discussing about the future, forgetting that the present that we are was the future of yesterday. What did we do yesterday that put us in the trouble that we are? And what can we do differently, new, so that when it comes to recognizing those who sold, either you sold Tombo. There is quite no difference. Somebody who sold Tombo and somebody who sold Jack Daniel. You are also selling beverage. So you are selling, you know, drinks. You are selling alcohol. But is that person accommodated? Is that person respected? Is there a pricing code? Is there an operation zone? Is there safety in that sector? Is there recognition? Do this person have an account? How much meme who is selling ginger? Who is selling, Kraftwerks? Protected. How do you have access to financial institution to expand your business of selling Kraftwerks? So, let us look at the caller and move forward. Yes, good morning.
Yes.
How are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm well.
I just have two comments. The one on the report on South Africa and the Minister of Question, what was that, the corruption issue thing?
Oh, okay.
The issue is, because South Africa democracy is a bit stronger you know.
Yeah.
And they are also, you know, it's more, I think I try to be closer with the American thing, a bit the Democrat.
Yeah.
Because the thing is to say, we are all working at the pressure of the state.
Yeah.
And what the common understanding is to say, there will be not an individual who is powerful than the state, or an institution which is powerful than the state. That is what we call a check and balance. The sort of system balance is based on those things. Look, there could be not an individual or an institution which is powerful than the state.
Because
the state must have the capacity, the other arm of the state must have the capacity to check and balance it. Any arm of the state or a citizen who is trying to undermine the state like that. So, that's why when even the president himself, my friend is not powerful than the state. Because the state has been there. Oshirongo Poesha, sometimes even Nanginova.
When you
come for 5 years, then you wanted to say, you are the head of the state. How can you be the head of the state?
No. but is that not within the law?
It's within the law, but it's wrong.
But when you look at other countries, they are saying instead of state. When you look at international platform,
my friend, international platform, like Americans, they are saying the president is the head of the state. But the president is not powerful than the state.
In terms of power, there we are correct. But in terms of naming, we can debate. But we are one. We are together. Yeah.
Because the issue. He is the head of the state. But you know what our problem? Every person here, all the head of the institution, most of them, they are appointed by the president. Now they are now performing at whose pressure now? As an appointed authority pressure.
But on sometimes on recommendation of a certain committee.
recommendation, we all know how recommendation works.
But how sure are you if I give you five people and take, we have to take from there, right?
Only commendation. You give even three people.
Yeah.
But that person has the privilege to choose one out of three.
Yeah.
So, because if he is not performing at the pressure of the president has the right to remove. You see? Now the person has been firing, he's firing on the recommendation of who? There's no recommendation when there is a firing. The person is just firing. But when you are appointing, there is a recommendation to appoint. But when it comes to firing, there is no recommendation. The person, because it's a political appointee, kind of. That is where the element now to say, no. You just look, the head of the police is the president.
ACC
is the president. You see? But, the guard is the president. No. How can the head of police arrest the president? Order the arrest of the president?
No, the president cannot be arrested on duty.
No, it's not on duty. Well, that's why I said, if you are said on duty, where that article said, everybody is equal before the law, where are you going to take it? And that is a fundamental article.
Yeah, but you know, it's a matter of legal interpretation. I'm not.
Not a legal interpretation. Straightforward. That's why we need to say, on what basis the president cannot be arrested on duty. Number one, you know.
I want you to give me an example. Somebody was arrested on duty. Then we can debate about that.
Let me tell you why the president cannot be arrested. You know when there was a situation in Katima in 99 or something, when the extradition group.
Yeah.
Then the president Loma is
there. Hold on.
How must I afford a new phone now?
Take control with Express Credit. Get reliable relief when you need it most. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars. Repayable over 2 to 5 months. Apply for a quick cash loan. Easy application. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or call 90,000.
Yes.
That's why I said, and the President Mioma intervened, because those guys were trying to undermine the state now, the sovereign, and the integrity of the state. Can you prosecute Mioma for that? No, you can't, because he was protecting the state.
Yeah.
Now, if I take an example, if now the president, for instance, raped a person.
Come again?
Let's put it there. Rape. Now you want to say he cannot be arrested.
No, 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 no.
Ah, no, I'm just asking.
No, 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 cannot.
What? Well, if he still...
No, look, there are provisions, ne? Because... When you have immunity, when you are operating, when you commit a certain crime and people you have seen, you will be forced to step down. You understand? That is what happened to South African, that was happened to Jacob Zuma. Because when you are doing something in operation of duty, that one you cannot, but when you have done something at that point, and let me say, only when
the president has specific power within the laws.
But I think that is open up there. But let's come back to the main conversation and let's see. Yeah.
My friend, every decision is within the state, by the state. Ne?
Yeah.
Within the rule. So any action after the rules, it doesn't matter who committed. Then you are accountable to it.
No, because let's look at the conversation that we have, because that one you said is linked to South African conversation. Are you referring to Mtono or what do you mean?
No, for me, I was just trying to say, when we said there is that a commission where even the Minister of Safety or Police sometimes like that in South Africa, they have been...
Commission of Inquiry, like, yeah.
Yeah. He's supposed to, we requested to step down. Then that's the way we are saying now. That is the reality of the state now. When the government employee now, when the government as in through an individual who was appointed, now try to undermine the state, then the state has to come in. Because you are working at the pressure of the state. And the point that I'm making to say, everybody's working at the pressure of the state.
Yeah,
including the pressure of everybody.
Okay. Now, let us contextualize it. I want your view, especially within between the judiciary and also the Minister of Justice, because that is where it's a test of our check and balance. Because I was reading the communications yesterday when the Justice Minister said, "I have executive authority," but the judiciary also went to their... the magistrate also went to their lawyers and say, "No, you are misquoting there's non-existent in what you are, there's no law."
If the minister has executive order or authority, in terms of which law?
Yeah?
In terms of which law?
No, it's your executive, you are empowered as an executive. Yeah, within your line of duties, within your job description, you are executive, you are in charge of that ministry. You are actually the head of that ministry.
Yeah, that's what I said, you have executive order, because that ministry that you are heading or whatever, there is a power that is vested in the minister.
Yeah.
It's not that you have to operate outside the rules.
Do
you think you can only wake up and say, because I'm executive, I have executive or automatic. And what was the purpose of that law? That was created for that ministry.
No, I hear you, because it's a matter of legal interpretation, because all these people are lawyers, and they do, you can't speak a vague language in law, because I'm also sure that he might have referenced.
Even themselves, the lawyers, they ask you in terms of which law.
Yeah, and I understand he has also referenced, but it's a matter of law. Law is not what you see, it's how you interpret it. Because,
So there are issues, we only cross the bridge when we get there. they are in court, right? They are all holding to court or something.
Yeah, but it's about the region agreement.
On the issue, it was on the issue of the informal settlement.
Yeah, informal economy.
Informal economy.
And I also need to commend you. It's like you read the report before. The issue of safety net that you spoke about was there. I wish you can also read that report and also see, because one of the points that you are raising is there, what you have stated.
Because what we need to understand there is to say protectionism is very important. That one you must understand.
Yeah.
The concept. The child has. How can you only overnight the person, they are already a grown-up business people. They have to start somewhere. But where they are starting, they need to be protected.
This is
the understanding. That's why we are saying, when you are saying, if a person is starting to sell tomato, now you find that the person might sometimes does not get. The means nando kufuta nendo SME. Sometimes it's not facing the SME.
Yeah.
Now you see now people are trying here and there. But we are saying now. Why? Because you must see the will of the person. The person wants to make a living. Can't you understand? Then if the person wants to make a living, but only that there's no supporting structure for the person. For the government, for the municipality, just to mention that there is a supporting structure for this person, whoever wants to make a business. Because at the end of the day, what we are saying, but there are at a point where these people doesn't need to pay anything. Because they are like children. The concept of work and pay, or shanaku
shanakurong,
it doesn't apply to a child.
You understand? Yeah, I hear you.
Therefore, the issue of tax. Also, sometimes might not apply to infant industry.
There is
a point where they were supposed to. You see, because this concept, we need to understand it and interrogate it proper to say, look, this time, that's why I said, if you just have the data of these people, to say, this person and this place, there is this person like this who is selling that, this and this, what gets involved. Maybe this is how the revenue coming. You know, the profit is making and what are you making a loss. Maybe you start training them here and there. But at the end of the day, you are going to collect all those people who are producing, selling the same thing. Then I said, you cannot have a person who's selling fat cake for a decade or 20 years.
Even 5 years is a lot.
You see?
Yeah.
That's why I said, can't you not correct these people? And you put them together to own a bucket.
Yeah, I think the to me the report is good. The question is always here to say, what are the practical actions? Because when you read it, that is well researched, and I've seen a lot of papers, but I commend when I see good data. But the question always to say, how are things going to be done? If the question of farming. I was looking at that when it comes out to say, no, you spoke about, for example, red line to be the hindrance of accommodating those farmers on the other side to be at the same time. Because if you are speaking about one economy, how can you have two divided countries if you have one economy that you want to speak about? But how are things going to be done? My concern is always that we spoke enough, we drafted enough, but how are things going to be done? Who have capacity to implement those projects? Do our leaders, our councillors, our city managers understand this, and are they using those data? Because you know, it's very difficult to see the results.
The issue is to say, sometimes there is data must be right, it must be correct, must be also accurate.
You
understand?
Yeah.
Those three words are very important words in income. You can have data, but they are not accurate. You must also have it, but they are not correct. But they are data. But it enables a point to understand what are you going to do with the data. How are you going to use it? Because the interpretation is very important at the end of the day. Because these data must lead you to something. One thing that I have seen is to say, look, we adapt. Concepts are coming in, but people misunderstood the concept. The same way we understood even the concept of like for instance, like be together initiative. The third generation. Then you are saying, ne?
Yeah.
That thing, you take it in the context of state of Vindo.
Yeah.
Now you have the memes that because these people apparently must generate revenue, buy land from state of Vindo, then they have to save this land for themselves. They have to do something and everything and bid on their own.
Yeah.
But these are the people who are selling Kapana.
Yeah.
In Vindo now, to save the land, that's what I'm putting up. They need the almost 2 million or 3 million or something, depending on the plot. They also need to pay surveyors and who are then planning all those things on their own cost.
Yeah.
But here, it's not a wrong concept, but it's applying to the wrong people. Why? Because these people that does not have the finance. But if you have the accountant, the police officer, the artisan and what?
Yeah.
50 of them, 100 of them, you put them together. Because they have to use their own labor. Even the surveyor also should supposed to be part of their them. You see? You're supposed to be part of it.
Yeah.
Now you have artisan, the blue players, they are also part of the group.
Mm.
And they are one who are going to work. And the architect also, they are also part of the group.
I hear you.
Now, when you have the group of Kapana people now, into that initiative, they can, if, one exact example to say, there is one group in the city of Windhoek, like say maybe Urara or Congo or something. They manage to pay 200,000 or something. They require the money for the land.
Mm-hmm.
But now they did not get that land. Why? Because of transfer cost issue, the land is not surveyed, there is no plan, it's not surveyed. People are stuck there. Like.
Yeah.
That's to say, you take even the concept of urbanization, we take it wrongly. That's why you find the now system with two faces. Why? Because the fundamental urbanization is the Vindhoek format that you see.
That was supposed to be, that is urbanization.
That is urbanization.
Because you are in urban.
Yeah, that is the formal bit of Vindhoek that you see. That is.
It was supposed to be like that.
Yeah. Now the other faces of which is informal bit of Vindhoek. That is not urbanization.
Mm-hmm.
That is not urbanization. It's not even close there.
Okay. One word due to time. We want to conclude.
So we just need to now to understand to say, when we talk of informal, let's understand that which now there is need for protectionism.
Yeah,
informal economy need to be protected because this is infant. Let's see the will of the people. Let's see what people want to do and what to do. But we need to protect them, as I said. There is always a starting point. And that starting point, then the person, that's why I said, because as we, it's like number, they just want to text everybody. Look, let me tell you. You want to text. But you never understood Kuja. This Mahango sometimes is just for consumption.
It's for survival, yes.
Yeah. Even if it's not for consumption, Ondo Arango Kadita Karandisa for Matara, Takarandisa also to a small scale people also. Okay, family in the other, Natango, that is Tarake.
So,
but you don't understand the whole concept.
Thank you, Neil, because of time.
Okay.
All right.
Yes. Always appreciate the views, always appreciate the conversation, especially regarding how do we make things right. And also, one thing that we can also take from the conversation of the caller is that, look, we need to define concepts and know what we are talking about. Because when we define a concept and we also scale them down to an ordinary person to understand, it's more easier for us to solve problems. And also the issue of information simplification. Because you have a well-written report that it's only people with high level of understanding that can be able to read and interpret that. But the question is always that when you speak, for example, of the report, the diagnostic report of formalizing the informal sector, how many of the people in the informal sector are going to read and understand that report? How are you going to simplify it to the taxi drivers? How are you going to simplify them to the man who's selling Kapana and Tate who is making shoes in the corner of a certain town, or to farmers? Because at a different level, at the communal area, how are you going to simplify this data? It's also a question of information simplification, especially when you come up with a very critical plan. And also when you look at NDP 6, how many Namibians understand NDP 6? The grandmother who is 78 years, who is 90 years, how do they understand NDP 6? And also their contribution to that regard. So, dear listeners, for more information, make sure that you subscribe to the Villager newspaper and you'll be able to read and also get the content of the conversation, especially when it comes to issues of informal economy. And take time and read the Villager newspaper and inform yourself so that you can be able to develop context and also be a contributor into national development. So due to time, thank you very much for following and tuning into Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. We are ending here for now, and I'm leaving you in the good hands of the Big Mike to unpack the day. And bye-bye for now. See you around. Sharp, sharp.